It's time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors, brought to you by Trax Power Sports. 2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. Our host is Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio.
Still to come in this hour, we're going to talk a little ski season here. Navi, I didn't mention this to you at the top of the last hour, but I got a note from Ski Utah with some of the capital investments, some of the new development that's been going on in preparation for the ski season. And I was really unsuccessful at getting a couple of resorts to come back and be on with us. But I thought it'd be fun to run through some of the things to look forward to at the various resorts. So we'll do that in what would normally be our fish bites, or not fish bites, sorry, our snow day segment coming up in the next half hour, if you're willing to play along.
I am, absolutely.
All right, we'll do that. Russ Smith is still here from Sky Call.
Still here. Can't get rid of me.
I've tried. It worked for the last 30 days.
He's called security twice.
Yeah. But Randy Opplinger joins us now. He is the Sport Fish Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. We want to talk kokanee fishing, which we will do in this effort to plant some kokanee elsewhere than where you can already find them in the state, Randy. But there's another story that's been sucking up the oxygen in the room, and I hate to even use that that phrase considering what we're about to talk about, but people have had questions because there was a fairly large fish kill up at Manaway Reservoir, an area that I'm real familiar with because we have relatives that used to have a permanent slot there, so we would go almost every weekend during the summer months when my kids were little. You think you figured out exactly what went on there, and I know there was some spraying going on for some algae, so tell us what happened.
Yeah, it looks like based off the information we have, Brigham City, who operates Manaway Reservoir, did a treatment for algae up there, which those of you who are familiar with Manaway, it's a reservoir that tends to get a lot of algal blooms, and the treatment they use is one that's totally safe for fish, but sometimes one of the after effects you get of these kinds of treatments is when you kill the algae. That algae after it's dead starts decaying, and as it decays, it starts sucking oxygen out of the water. And then what we think happened is oxygen levels just got to a point where they just weren't tolerable for fish, and some fish died in the process. And that's really based off of some of the testing that we've done since we identified this fish kill event. We're seeing parameters for things like temperature, pH, other things seem to be perfectly suitable for fish, but oxygen has been a little bit on the low end of things. And really, to further back that up, that the fish that we're seeing lost are rainbow trout, recently stocked rainbow trout. Rainbow trout aren't too tolerant of low oxygen conditions. Other species like bluegill, bass, perch that are in Manaway seem to be doing just fine after this. And those are species who tolerate low oxygen a little bit better than trout do.
Navi, you have any questions you want to jump in on here?
No, that's exactly how I see it. Trout, they're volatile. They got to have that pristine oxygenated water, and it makes perfect sense that they were the first to die.
Yeah. It does look like, too, Randy, you were telling us before we jumped on to talk here, that it was the newly stocked fish that were affected. The good news even there is that people are still catching those 6 to 8 inch stock fish, so it wasn't a total kill in that regard.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. So what we're seeing is, those 8 to 10 inch rainbow trout, we're seeing some of those have died off. But again, people are still catching those. People are still catching bluegill, bass, and perch out there. So it looks like we didn't lose all the trout. It's just some portion of those trout that we recently stocked died.
But it was the town of Manaway that did the spraying, huh?
Yeah, I think it was actually Brigham City, or it may have been Manaway.
Or Brigham City.
Yeah, regardless, I mean, what they're doing makes a lot of sense from a water quality perspective. You know, they're using it for drinking water. They want to maintain high quality drinking water. And, you know, the treatment they did is a safe treatment for fish. This is just one of the after effects that sometimes happens, and it's a difficult one to predict.
All right. Now on to talking something a little more pleasurable. We're talking about kokanee salmon here. And for the first time, you guys are going to be doing some egg taking at a couple of places you haven't in the past, evidently.
Yeah, we're adding a new egg take, at least for this year, that we're testing out, and it's at Fish Lake. Traditionally, we get all our kokanee eggs from a run that we get at Strawberry Reservoir, and another one coming out of Flaming Gorge Reservoir. And we've had some concerns in recent years about just the number of kokanee eggs that we're getting out of those two water bodies. And this year, you know, we're not doing very well getting kokanee. We're sitting at about getting half the eggs that we were hoping to get, and that really forced us to look at a third place to go get eggs and see if we could get enough to meet our statewide needs. And Fish Lake is the one that really jumped to mind. It has easy access. It has a robust kokanee population. So we're out there and we're testing it out this year. I don't know how it's going to go. It's sort of experimental, but we're looking at it as being a third egg source down the road.
So half as many fish or just half as many eggs when it comes to kokanee? And if so, what do you think is going on there?
Well, it's really half as many of both, to be honest with you. We've taken half as many fish, and that leads to half as many eggs. And, you know, really what's going on is I think, you know, the after effect of the drought conditions that we've seen for a couple of years leading up to this year, it's had an impact on our kokanee populations. And it's, you know, then therefore, you know, leading to some impacts and just the total number of eggs that we get. And I should point out that this is really an issue that the entire western part of the United States is seeing. So this is not isolated to Utah. We've been talking to other states and trying to get a picture of how their kokanee runs are doing, and everyone's reporting the same thing. So this seems to be really an environmental thing driven by drought and high temperatures and just the impact that's had on kokanee populations.
Navi, your thoughts?
Yeah, my question is, what's the original source? Kokanee were brought here, I don't know, 30 years ago maybe, and introduced, and from where do we get those? And genetically, I just want to know, you know, how different they are from water body to water body.
That's a great question. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if I could provide an answer for that ultimate source of those fish. We've had kokanee and flaming gorge probably going on for close to 50 years or so. And strawberry, we've done some rotenone treatments in strawberries that have been reintroduced, but they all kind of trace back to the same original source. But I think the source is coming out of Washington long term. I might be incorrect on that, but ultimately we're getting them from the same source if you track it back 50 years or so.
You're saying we've had kokanee in the state for that long?
We have, yeah. No, I don't know. Well, I can tell you originally the first kokanee we put in the state were in Bear Lake, believe it or not. I believe it was in the 1920s.
Wow.
They didn't stick around in Bear Lake. We haven't seen one since I think the 1930s, but we've got history of putting them in the 40s and the 50s. I think Flaming Gorge was late 60s, early 70s we put them in. So we've been stocking kokanee for a while.
Boy,
I've been 14, I'd catch them in a Porcupine Reservoir. Oh, gosh, that's got to be 40 years ago.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I thought this was a fairly new thing, and it was really catching on with anglers lately.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. We've stocked them for a long time. You know, you brought a porcupine. I think porcupine was 70s, late 60s. We put kokanee in, so it's been a while. But if you look at the number of waters across the state that have kokanee, this is really a species that's blowing up in recent years. I think, you know, going through about 2016 or so, there was a window from maybe 1970 through 2016. We had maybe 5 kokanee fisheries in the state. You know, every now and then we would add a water. But then since then, we've really blown up the numbers. I think we're up to around 12 or so kokanee waters across the state. So we've doubled, even more than doubled the number of kokanee waters over the last 8 or so years.
All right,
in the old days, Tim, they called them lockies, because they were, you know, kokanee or sockeye salmon, Oncorhynchus nerca. But because they couldn't access the ocean, they called them locks because they would go into a lake and then up into rivers in, like, Montana, Idaho, and so forth.
Randy, let me ask you this, and maybe you aren't willing to answer it at this point, but since you're seeing fewer fish and taking fewer eggs, does that mean we can expect there will be an adjustment in limits on them down the line?
Yeah, it's a little early to say what we're going to have to do in response. The thing about kokanee, which makes it's a very tricky species for us to manage. I should back up a little bit. Kokanee, yes, there's a lot of stock kokanee in the waters that you fish, but it actually turns out the natural reproduction of kokanee is very good as well. So if you look at a water like Flaming Gorge, I think it's about 20% of the kokanee in Flaming Gorge are stock. The other 80% are naturally reproduced fish. Strawberry, it's closer to 50-50. I don't know about some of our other waters across the state, but the point is, you know, it's hard for us to assess what the kokanee fishery is going to look like long term. We may be taking fewer eggs this year and stocking fewer fish when we put these things out about May next year. But if we have excellent natural reproduction of fish and they survive really well, which is possible because we have good water levels going into this year, it may make up for reduced stocking, and it may not impact anglers long term. It's really hard to assess. We're not going to know that for a couple of years, but It's something we are looking at, though, is our regulations for kokanee. Because of the last couple of years, we may have to look at some kokanee regulation changes, but we're still at a phase where we're looking at the data that we've got in our hands and deciding whether we need to go down that route or not.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. As always, Randy, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Tim.
Going to take a break. We'll come back with more of KSL Outdoors Radio here in just a minute. Thanks so much for joining us here on this Saturday on KSL News Radio. All right, what do you say we do a little road tripping here? It's Road Tripping with Bob and Mark. .com.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
We talked to Bob last half hour. He's out and about with a tour, and they're staging themselves, I'm sure, as we speak, next hour, getting ready for the annular eclipse. And, Mark, you wanted to talk about Mildred County. That's a good spot for watching the eclipse today, too, I think.
It absolutely is, and Bob and I were down there last Wednesday to do a few things in photography and videography down there, and we were seeing their preparations in the county. There's a few places that are getting ready for some crowds, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and I'm a little surprised. I guess I underestimated this, and Russ and I were just talking about this off the air. I didn't know that it was going to be that big of a deal, but they're talking about traffic jams and thousands of people that are coming to Central Utah because it's going to be one of the better spots to see it. I've never chased an eclipse. Russ, I don't know if you have.
I've seen them, but I haven't chased them.
No. Last time this happened, and it was a total eclipse, if I remember right, the viewing areas were up in Idaho, and so I had a lot of people here, Mark, that headed that direction. I guess it would be the same if you're the kind of person that chases these things to go down to someplace like Millard County.
Well, it's been interesting. As Bob and I have been out and about over the last year, we've been talking to the lodging operations, and a lot of them have said, hey, we're already booked up for this October for a few days for this eclipse. From people from around the world are coming here, and so it's bigger than we thought.
Wow, it is, and that's a good shot in the arm for the tourism in those areas too, isn't it?
Fantastic. You know, we were actually down last Wednesday to Cove Fort talking to that historic fort right there at the junction of I-70 and I-15 run by the LDS Church. And the missionaries down there that worked at the fort were saying, yeah, we're gearing up for the crowds. And they were a little bit concerned. And I saw a digital billboard on I-15 last week saying this freeway may be a little bit overwhelmed next Saturday.
Territorial State House right there in Fillmore is another spot people may want to stop at, as long as you're going to go do this.
Well, if you're going to be out and about today or Saturday as this is airing, then yes, Cove Fort's a great place to spend some time. The Territorial State House in Fillmore. Remember that Fillmore was going to be our state capital, and that's a beautiful building and facility with lots of history inside there that you can tour and learn about. So we love that. And then if you want to go west of Fillmore, out into the wilderness, if you will, there's a couple of places we were at last week. One of them were these lava tubes, these volcanic lava tubes that you can drop down into. And we had a couple of families with us and a variety of other people. And we were going into these tubes and dropping off into these side caverns. And pretty dark down there. I think I dinged my head. So you go into the lava tubes.
Well, I was going to ask about the safety of this before we start recommending it. How much skill do you need to have to pull it off?
Well, you just need to be able to walk. And there's ways to get down in there that are not too bad. We had children going in there and older adults. And so just mobile is good. But bring a headlamp or a flashlight and keep an eye on the ceiling.
Okay. All right. What's this lace curtain you made mention of that's also in that same area?
Right in that area. And, you know, it's that lava that was there. But this is a huge, maybe 500-foot wide wall that goes up about 200 feet. And it looks like the lava was coming off the hillside and dripping down the side of this wall and then somehow solidified in the dripping motion. And so it's like going to the beach where you dribble the sand out of your fingers and make a little castle, and it just dribbles down the side. It's these drips of lava that solidified right as they were dripping. Mm. It is just remarkable to see.
Yeah, the way you describe it sounds like it. Mark came prepared to talk about an area you're more familiar with, Russ, and that's Delta. Down around Delta.
Somewhat familiar, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Your dad lived there the last part of his life.
Lived there a long time.
Long time.
You bet.
You've got a couple of museums out there, I think, that you could take in during the day, which people may not know about.
Well, of course, Delta is just a little bit north and west of these lava tubes and the Lace Curtain and up above Fillmore mm-hmm. there. But the Topaz Museum, you know, back in World War II, as Pearl Harbor was bombed by the Japanese, we got a little concerned in this country about who might be friendly with the Japanese that were now American citizens. And so we created this camp in Delta, and we did some in Colorado, I know, and there are other places in the country. Right. And what they did is they moved Japanese people who are American citizens. They moved them into these camps. They didn't have to stay there, I found out. They could go anywhere east of those camps, but they could not go west towards the coast. And that was just built on the fear we had. But I heard one of the coolest stories while I was there. There was a man there whose father had been in the camp, in actually a camp in Colorado, and interned in the camp there and living there. And he decided to volunteer for the military. So he went to Europe and he helped liberate the people in Italy during the war. And so here's a man who is facing some challenges in the United States because of his heritage, right, but volunteers to go liberate the people of Italy. And I just thought, what a fantastic story. Almost brought some tears to my eyes to hear from this man who was the son of this gentleman who had gone into the military to do that.
Yeah, there's quite a few stories like that, similar, because these were Americans. And there was no reason for them to be out there, but that's beside the point.
Yeah,
they believed in their country, and they went to war when we went to war.
That's great. And what a treat for you to stumble onto that conversation.
Yeah.
Right next door to Topaz Museum is Great Basin Museum with a lot of artifacts and elements of the West, so you might want to look into that. Remind me, Mark, what the URL is that you guys are now directing people to where they can still get a link to road tripping, right?
Yes, they can get a link to roadtripping.com or with bobandmark.com, but it's utahphotogs.com. Utah photo with a GS on the end.
Utahphotogs.com. Mark, thanks as always for taking us along for the ride today.
Good to join you both, and we'll look forward to talking with you next week.
We will take another break and come back. Navi and I are going to take a look in what will be soon our snow day segment with some of the developments, the new improvements that are coming to a resort near you. So stay with us.